Girls from the Powerpuff Girls. And when I'm not saving Townsville from Mojo Jojo, I'm hanging out with my favorite hunky superhero, Secret Alias Man, and his lovable squire, Sancho Panda, the fantastic Justice Squad Super Wonder Brother Friends, who review stuff. They're so dreamy. So come on, let's fight bad movies together!
Welcome to our show, everybody. How? How did we just have that intro? Where did that...
Because...
What the what?
In Hollywood, it's all about who you know, and I know Bubbles.
Wow. This is... I don't even know how to follow it up. Thanks for watching, everybody, for listening.
Whatever you're doing.
How do you...
We don't judge. You're in the privacy of your own home. You have the right to live your life.
How do you know one of the Powderpuff Girls?
No! Why does everyone always get that wrong?
I just did it to see how you'd respond. How do you know? All right. How do you know one of the Power Plus girls? Jiffy Puff? How do you know the Jiffy Puff Marshmallow girls? I don't understand. This blows my mind. I can't even say their name correctly.
Choose the form of your adorable destructor.
I just thought of Bubbles.
What did you do, Ray?
So, how?
So, from my acting days, I was fortunate enough to meet a lot of really talented, incredible people, one of whom is Kristen Sutton, who is the voice of Bubbles for a plethora of events and other recordings and promotions. So she is the official voice of Bubbles for all of the things.
And how much did this set us back?
It set us back your cut of the last six episodes.
No!
But it's worth it.
Well, I'm still waiting for that check to come in. So don't hold your breath, Bubbles. Sorry to burst your bubbles? I don't know. She's probably heard that one way too much. I take it back. You've heard that too much. I know.
If you're lost underwater, follow the bubbles.
I know when a joke would have been good 10 years ago and not now. So I'm your host, Sancho Panda. With me as always, Secret Alias Man. What's your alias today?
Today, my alias is Anna Mation.
Oh, nice. I thought you were going to say Conda for some reason.
No. No.
It would make no sense.
This week, I'm a girl again.
Well, I'm really glad you said that because we're on episode 13.
Yeah, I'm not a man. I'm just drawn that way.
And do you know what that means?
I do know what that means. It means... Wait, you said 13th, right?
Yes.
Wow.
Episode 13.
It means never have teenage sex around a campground hockey player if you're Kevin Bacon.
Wow.
Because then it's not Footloose, it's head loose.
Oh my gosh.
Although, if it's Thursday the 13th, you know, knock yourself out.
I thought it meant that we got to hang out with a 13-year-old Jennifer Gardner's consciousness trapped in a 30-year-old Jennifer Gardner's body. And now that I say it, I can't think of any way that doesn't sound creepy.
You want to try that again?
13 going on 30. Haven't you seen that movie before?
Yeah, I have. Where she falls in love with the Hulk.
Yes, who wouldn't?
Yeah. I mean, he's smart, he's strong, he's tall.
Man, if every nerd in middle school had the advantage of being able to show how hunky they were in the future to their middle school crush, just imagine.
Oh, man.
It would have made no difference for me, but I'm sure somebody out there would have benefited from it.
By the way, there's a... Somebody took the time to put together the middle school / high school photos of all of the Avengers.
Oh, gosh.
I will tweet this tomorrow for our listeners, but it's amazing to look at a 7th grade Robert Downey Jr. and Mark Ruffalo and Tom Hiddleston and Chris Hemsworth. It truly does give hope to all of us that one day we'll be cool and we'll get girls.
Well, we know that to be true from experience.
That's true. We have each successfully gotten at least one girl that we can claim.
That's still with us somehow.
Until they listen to this.
And for our 13th year anniversary, my wife and I saw Kubo and the Two Strings.
Oh, 13th. So meta.
It really is. And that's happy coincidence. It's one of the movies we're going to be reviewing today. Along with The Little Prince.
So I am so excited because I finally get to talk about two movies that I love, 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 love. But first, I'm even more excited about something else. So I have to interrupt this broadcast.
You have to interrupt yourself right now.
Interruptions don't make themselves.
People do. All right. Go right ahead.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
So, Samurai Jack is coming back.
Yeah. It's coming back. Da-da-da. Samurai Jack.
Tell me you know the actual words.
Well, I was just saying it's coming back, and then I blanked on a word that rhymed with back at that exact moment.
Okay, first of all, the actual words are, gotta get back, back to the
I
past.
I need a snack? Oh. Oh, so that word didn't even rhyme. Past doesn't even rhyme. Okay, I was putting too much pressure on myself.
Gotta get back to the past, Samurai Jack.
Samurai Jack.
Yes, accents notwithstanding.
The first time I ever saw it was you showing me the one where he's stuck on a bridge with a bagpipe player.
The Scotsman.
that was awesome.
Top five episode ever. The Scotsman. So what you have to understand about the series is that the entire premise, similar to The Fugitive and a lot of other things, is that he had a particular villain and a particular mission, and the series ended before he could confront the villain and complete his mission. He never went back to the past to save his family, and he never defeated Aku, who was his villain. They did 52 episodes, and it didn't finish. So it was like Firefly for those of us who followed Samurai Jack. So in the same way that Joss Whedon said, okay, I'm never going to be able to do another series of Firefly. Let me see if I can make a movie. Gendy Kartakovsky, who, by the way, it's Gendy, not Gendy. It's a hard G.
Mm.
So it's a hard G, like, get me more money so I can give the world more greatness.
Gotcha.
Gendy Kartakovsky tried for a decade to see if he could get a movie made, and it just never got off the ground. And then he completed his work on Hotel Transylvania, by the way.
I love that song.
Pardon me, boy. So he found himself with a little bit of time, and he just randomly sent off an email to the head of the studio saying, hey, what do you think about me maybe doing one last season of Samurai Jack and wrapping everything up? And the guy goes, yeah, sure, cool.
What?
Yeah.
Man, Fox would never do that for Firefly.
No. But Gendy Kartakovsky, you have to imagine, you have to remember, did the animated Star Wars Clone Wars.
Right. He made himself legit with that.
He made himself legit, and he reinvigorated the entire Star Wars franchise. So he had a little bit of clout. So this will be season 5, which will be a continuation of where we left off. So it will not be a reboot. It will be a few years after episode 52. Jack is a little bit older. He's a little bit lost. So it's a story of redemption and finding who he is again. There were some comics that during this decade of no Samurai Jack were out there. And although they're very good, Gendy has said that they're not going to be canon. So he's just going to pick up where he himself left off. So the cool thing is that this will be on Adult Swim, not Cartoon Network. So being Adult Swim gives him a little bit more storytelling leeway. And although he has come out and said he's still going to be respectful of the fact that a lot of parents watch the show with their kids, and he's not going to go DC Dark.
Right.
It does still give him some room to go deeper with the emotions and the stakes. So he's going to give a proper ending to the series, he said, and I quote, naturally, the intensity and drama will be higher this time around due to the nature of its conclusion. It will be more intense, more moody, with much more real emotion. The drawing style He said, "Technology is different now. We're using computers instead of hamsters."
I always wondered what they used. But it wouldn't stand for it.
If all of us who love the original Samurai Jack remember, the backgrounds were just amazing. They were hand painted. There were these watercolor. They were very respectful of the Japanese source material. And he said it will still feel that way. It will still feel handcrafted. Still feel? Sure. Mm-hmm. It'll still feel. Hugh Jackman's involved.
Yeah, real steel feel.
With robots, yes.
Yeah.
It will still feel handcrafted and not digital. They have the same voice actor for Jack, Phil Lamar.
Woohoo!
Unfortunately, the actor who played Aku has passed away.
That was selfish of him.
His name was Mako, and we all loved him. And, you know, Gendy himself has said there's no replacing him, but please, you know, just understand that they wanted to continue the story so much that they moved forward. But it will be out, quote, sometime in 2016. Well, it's September, so there's not much 2016 left, so it should be soon. Wow. There will be 10 episodes, 22 minutes each, and I am beside myself. I've made a clone of myself so I can literally be beside myself.
That seems a bit excessive.
It's worth it. All that technology I wasted just to do this. Because this to me and to many, many, many other people, to my daughters, this is not a cartoon. This is a masterwork of art. And for the resolution to happen after over a decade, I am at a loss for words as to what it means to me. It is the equivalent of serenity. So, okay. I got that out. And scene.
We now return you to regular programming.
Catch a breath. And now get excited again, because we're about to talk about two incredible movies.
I'm excited again.
Which one do we want to do first, Kubo or The Little Prince?
Oh, it's Sophie's animation choice. Take Kubo!
All right, we'll start out with Kubo. Kubo and the Two Strings, we both said that we wanted to see it. We both said we thought it was going to be amazing. It might have been the only things on our list that was as amazing as we thought it would be.
Civil War.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yep.
I will still convince you to give that a 5-penny rating before this year is out.
I don't know. We'll get to our panda ratings on these two, but yeah.
So we will not be arguing about Kubo unless our argument is who loves it more.
I will have to wait and see.
So, speaking of things that took 10 years to get made, this film was 10 years in the making.
Really?
Yes. And it is the heartwarming story of a young boy whose grandfather ripped his little eyeball out as a baby.
If that doesn't sound Disney or DreamWorks, I don't know what does.
And now he wants the second little eyeball as like some General Tarkin version of the crocodile from Peter Pan.
Man.
And it's also the heartwarming story of a young boy whose V for Vendetta masked terrorist murder ants are trying to also kill him. And then things get dark.
Well said. Is it safe to say we're going to have to just start with spoilers from the very beginning?
No, we can do this.
All right. So, non-spoiler talk.
Yes.
Do we even do his strengths and weaknesses?
What's the point?
How about you say a strength, and I'll say a strength, and
then okay.
You say one.
Like I said, who loves this more?
Oh, you're going down, sister!
All right, I'll start. One of the strengths of this movie is that Kubo is totally relatable, because he's just a little boy, and even though he's on an adventure where the stakes are really high, he still behaves like a little boy. And sometimes he just finds joy and fun in the little things, which is exactly what a child will do in a situation like that. And it's just adorable and it works.
I agree. And there are some moments where he shows a true sense of love to his mother that you feel a little boy would show.
I'm already tearing up. We're barely into this.
All right, I have a strength.
Okay.
It had great pacing.
Yeah, yeah.
There were moments that were quiet. And as the viewer, you really got to take a breath and enjoy the moment and enjoy the plot and process, okay, this is where he is now and this is what he's facing. And it really, it affected me. It made me think, in contrast to many other movies that are just so dense that think they have to go full throttle all the time. Mm-hmm. These quiet moments were such good storytelling, and it inspired this metaphor in my head of, it's like the moments when you're reading a book and you turn the page.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it were So how would you describe watching Suicide Squad in contrast to that?
That is so funny that you would say that, because in my show notes I have, not dense like so many animated CGI films, and Suicide Squad.
Suicide Squad is like a choose-your-own-adventure where you're constantly flipping pages, and you're like, oh, well, that's a dead end.
No, Suicide Squad is like when you walk into Best Buy and they have 8 movies playing at once.
I can't disagree with that. All right, speaking of pacing, also with the storytelling, another strength of this movie is how it opens. You think it's going to open with classic narration, and then the narration doesn't give you anything, and you learn about the story as it unfolds, and characters don't unnecessarily say things that they wouldn't need to say, even though you don't know about that world.
I agree. And it was, again, that feeling of turning the page in the book, where you had this delicious experience of not knowing what was coming next.
Yeah, yeah. And there's just something about when a story starts with showing you instead of telling you. And so it challenges your brain to start piecing together every little clue that you see on screen. It's just completely engaging. The only other time I remember feeling like this at the beginning of an animated movie was watching WALL-E.
Yes, I'm with you. I'm with you on that. Because the little bit that they gave you was engaging, but you were leaning forward in your seat wanting to know what it all meant and what was his life about.
Exactly, yeah. And why was his mother in the state she was in, and how long had things been like that? Why is she giving them the instructions that she is? Everything that happens, and that's after the talking starts, but even before then, every little thing he's doing for her, it's just, it's so cool.
Okay, I have a strength.
It's hard not to spoil.
I have a strength. The magic throughout this tale truly felt magical.
Yeah.
In the way, like the first time we saw Hogwarts and the candles in the Great Hall were floating.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And
you just accept that it's part of a magical world where,
yes,
not everything needs,
yes,
to be explained.
Because it wasn't part of some magic battle. It was just the kind of magic that was in the corners of the pages.
It's that kind of magic.
Do you know that I love you for doing the Queen Highlander thing?
When they forced that line into Highlander, what an eye roll moment. Okay, anyways.
No, any Highlander reference is a win.
There can be only one Highlander reference this podcast. Oh, darn it.
So the thing is that that's that special, understated kind of magic that's like in the corners of the pages, and it's enough to fill the world of the story and make you realize, yeah, there's magic everywhere here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this is the path that this little boy is walking in.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. All right. I have a strength.
Go.
The idea that he has a quest to find a certain number of objects to defeat a foe felt very like Greek mythology meets like a RPG game. Like it could make a great game, video game, like playing Zelda. And I loved the way it was handled.
I do too. And I don't think this is a spoiler, but he had to find 3 things. He had to find the armor impenetrable,
mm-hmm,
the sword unbreakable,
mm-hmm,
and the helmet invulnerable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which made me think, like, there are more things like this that exist.
Yes.
So, for example, in Transformers, wait, stay with me. Megan Fox's, the pants undirtyable.
Yes.
In Lord of the Rings, Legolas's, the quiver unemptyable.
The balance unimbalanceable.
You know, at least Hawkeye had the decency to run out of arrows and be useless in a battle. So, good on you,
so
Hawkeye.
So true, yeah. Uh-huh.
But Kubo himself had the origami paper unrunoutable.
It's true.
But I agree, that was a nice quest. It was a very Joseph Campbell kind of, you know, journey of a thousand steps thing to do, was for him to have to go on a quest. And at the end, maybe it wasn't the fact that you attained the three things as much as the growth that you made in your journey to attain them.
Yeah, that was going to be a whole other strength that I was going to mention, but just, yeah, exactly. That the quest for the objects, it's the journey, mm-hmm. not the objects themselves.
Mm-hmm.
When you started saying things that reminded you of, I was not expecting what you said. I was expecting a reference to Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows with the wand that can beat it, the unbeatable wand, the invisible cloak, and the Stone of Resurrection. So
a thing that I noticed is, in the beginning, this film does a very good job of emotionally investing you in both the mother and the little boy.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me think that there is a tradition of that, and Disney does very well with this, of how do you make a character attach himself and imprint himself upon you at the beginning of a film so that you're with him the whole way. Mm-hmm. So an example would be Aladdin, who gave the bread that he stole to the younger child that he sees in the alley.
Yeah, that's a good example. I'm thinking of Belle from Beauty and the Beast and having to care for a father who's a bit kooky.
Exactly. So in this film, which is not really a spoiler, when Kubo is taking care of his mother, you get a very similar heartfelt, it's like your heart reaches out to him and you empathize and you want him to succeed and do well.
Yeah.
Or like that time in the Hunger Games when Katniss was hungry and she got some pita bread.
Nice. I'm not sure I put that on the same level, but and you can add in anything you want to for puns. Puns make everything better.
Did I push it? I felt like I pushed it. But unlike other stories where your parents have died and you are actually an orphan, like Aladdin or Harry Potter,
mm-hmm.
his mother needed constant care, which is, for a child, a form of limbo.
Yeah.
And so hats off to the writers, who, by the way, are Mark Hames and Chris Butler, for showing a child who had the kind of strength to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, and putting them in that position in the first place.
Yes. Yes. So then you really believe that his heart is good and his courage comes from somewhere and his strength comes from somewhere.
Agreed. Speaking of strengths.
Yes.
I have others, but I can't do them without spoilers.
Do we rate before we go to spoilers?
Sure, let's rate it. 5 pandas for me. This is my favorite movie of the summer.
All right. Tell me why this gets your 5 panda. This is your first 5 panda rating of our show.
Yes, it is.
So
it might be my only one for a long time.
We need special trumpet 5 panda. Sancho panda 5
Sancho
panda.
Sancho pandas, pandas, trumpet, trumpet. Each panda has a trumpet. I'll add some reverb and echo. It'll be epic.
Thank you. So tell me why this is your first 5 panda rating of 2016.
I think the originality of the story, plus how well it's told, plus how good the characters are, plus the guts to do this with a kid's movie, how dark it gets, how spooky it gets, yet it's still age appropriate. Like, it's not too spooky. I wouldn't take a really young kid to it. I actually wanted to ask you at what age you would take a kid to see this movie. But there's really so many reasons. I love the song at the end. I was thinking about this. I'm not sure if you were going to mention Zootopia in better or worse. But this is better than Zootopia because this song is way better than Shakira's song at the end of Zootopia. try everything.
Well, you know.
Terrible advice for kids, by the way.
So let me just say this to Hollywood in general about the song that you pick for the end credits. The way you leave a room is the most important.
Yes. Oh, and my goodness. It was such a good ending song. While My Guitar Gently Weeps. It worked so well with the movie.
By Regina Spektor.
The last time I liked a movie that the music that ended that well was in The Two Towers, when it had Gollum's song.
Was Gollum's song like this? It's the Hobbit. Where's
my treasure? Whenever anybody was looking, he wouldn't sing, but whenever anyone else turned around, he would go, "Hello, my baby. Hello, my honey." So, I'm not sure if I explained it well enough, but that's in general why I give it 5 pandas. Because I really can't think of anything bad to say about it. And I saw it the second time, and I liked it even more after thinking I was already deeply in love with the movie.
I am going to give it 5 pandas.
Woohoo! So it's our first high five.
This is our first 10. This is a 10.
Yes.
Unprecedented. As per my criteria that I mentioned in previous episodes of how I rate these, not only do I give it the full 5 pandas, but I am sure that this movie will get even better on repeated viewings.
I can attest to that.
You've seen it how many times?
I've seen it twice, but after seeing it the first time and then seeing how bad it did in the box office, I invited 5 other friends and paid for all of us to see it again because I loved the movie so much and I wanted it to be supported better.
That put it over the top.
Yes. It's still not as high as Box Trolls, but oh well. Box Trolls was amazing too.
But, you know, there are a finite number of films in the world that you could watch.
There are a shortage of perfect films in the world.
It would be a shame to box office damage this one.
Yes.
But I would watch this over and over and over and over. And I am going to use the M word.
Uh-oh. Marvelous?
It is a masterpiece.
Agreed.
So yes. I cannot recommend this more highly. If you have children age 8 or older.
Yeah, okay, that's a good age. There's some spooky stuff in that.
But here is one of the things that I like about this film, and I'm going to get into this even more later. But it deals with the themes of how do you cope with loss?
Yes, both of our movies do this.
In a way that is admirable and honorable and healthy.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And
how many movies do that? And how many kids' movies do that?
If I could give this 6 pandas, because here's the reason.
One of them is really fat.
Here's the reason that I say that, because if we could give awards for extra credit, bonus points, for themes that it achieved and accomplishments that it achieved that were above and beyond just making a good film, this would have earned those extra credits to give it a 6 panda rating. And the theme of how a child can still have a good outlook on life, despite the fact that he has suffered some things and lost irreplaceable people in his life, yet can still have a worldview that is good. Mm-hmm. That in and of itself deserves it.
Agreed. Loved it.
Loved it.
It's amazing. We didn't even mention the animation because that's how good the story is. And the animation was phenomenal. Oh my goodness. Every time, there were several times where something would happen. Like when all of the paper birds fly by and the monkey's fur just puffs. And I just thought to myself, someone made a decision to do that. Someone said to another person, "Do you know how long this is going to take?" And then the other person said, "Who cares? We're doing it anyways."
Yes.
And it looks so good. There's so many times they made that choice in the movie.
And you can feel that. You can feel that someone said it's worth it.
Mm-hmm.
The animation to me, it went the way of imagination. Mm-hmm. Like your mind would form hearing the story about a boy who makes origami move. This is what you would see in your head.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it did not go the way of duplicating realism, which some animated movies do.
Yeah, and it oddly makes it less real.
So I was impressed just moment after moment after moment that it felt like imagination, not duplication.
Well said. I liked the rhyme, too. Extra credit points for rhyming. on your point. Puns and rhymes. That's what we do here.
Puns and rhymes. Fantastic Justice and rhymes.
Super Wonder Brother Friends, who review stuff with puns and rhymes.
Oh my God. Did I just sing a song from a musical?
You know, what is wrong with me? That was Hazel Eyes when I was a kid. But this guy really is hung up on some girl with hazel eyes.
That's how good this movie is. It made me sing a musical. Okay, spoilers.
Spoilers.
Cue music.
Spoilers. Where do we start? You go first.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So the sisters who attack.
Sisters. Sisters. They were never such creepy sisters. When a certain gentleman stole our sister.
Yes, the V for Vendetta, wicked witches, wicked witches of the East and West. If they were twins at the end of the hall in The Shining.
Yes.
Sisters.
Uh-huh.
Which is why I said, if you have a child 8 years old or older.
Yeah, and maybe some 8-year-olds couldn't understand it, couldn't take it, depending on their constitution.
Yeah. But they felt like a real threat. They felt like something you needed to not stand and fight, but to run from.
Yeah. And the creepy voice they used, the voice actress for that did such a good job. I got chills the first time I heard Kubo.
Yes.
It was almost like, why are you crying, Smeagol? It was so creepy.
All of the creepy, scary things were that way. A couple of times I thought, was Guillermo del Toro involved with this?
Yeah, it was beyond Tim Burton. It really was. Yeah.
Because, you know, it would be a good thing if he was, but was he?
You know, I'm so interesting that you made that comparison, because I think a lot of what Laika does, I would reckon to Guillermo del Toro. I would say Coraline is a lot like Pan's Labyrinth.
Yes.
And Box Trolls feels like something he would have done. So, absolutely.
And the studio, you know, is known for having some of its dark tones, but there are ways to do dark, and there are ways to not do dark. And I'm looking at you, DC. Because this had its dark tones, but, you know, there have been stranger things on TV lately.
Hey-o.
And it can be done well.
Yeah. And you'll know that once you watch Stranger Things.
Mwah. But that is the lesson, is not to just go dark and cash a check, but to pick a vision and commit to it. And if that fits with your vision, then commit to it. But if it doesn't, then don't.
Yeah, yeah. And the light in the darkness is what makes the hero great. Not for him to blend in with the darkness and for it to be murky.
Right.
So, yeah. Okay, here's one of my favorite things about this movie. Sometimes it was predictable, like where a kid might be able to piece together something that's gonna happen. And I like that they do that with a kid's movie. Kind of like how it's obvious that the bunny is evil in Hoodwinked.
Yeah.
You know? Someday that little guy will rule the world. Huh. Plot evil much? But,
or
but there
even...
are other times where you think it's gonna... Wait, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, even in Zootopia, where it turned out the politician was the bad guy.
Yeah. The one who seemed the most innocent. You're like, okay, saw that a mile away. But it's okay, because it worked well. And this time they do that sometimes, and then there are other times where you expect something, and then something else happens. So at the very end, when Kubo's fighting against his grandfather, and by the way, kudos for piecing together, for Kubo to figure out the real reason the grandfather wanted his other eye is so he couldn't look people in their eyes and see their soul and connect with them. How deep is that?
Very.
And to give him the clarity to realize it and explain it to us, the audience.
And because you and I are always talking about, okay, let's be the villain. Let's look at it from their point of view. This was such a inventive and introspective and honest look at a villain still has guilt.
Yeah, agreed.
And it's possible that a lot of what he's doing is so that he won't feel that guilt. And this, I thought, I'm right there with you. Mm-hmm. You know, this is where I'm saying bonus points, extra credit.
And again, not over-explaining, I feel like there must have been some other reason he wanted that second eye, that it was going to give him some power that he had lost by going blind, but it's never actually explained. I think there was more motivation for him than just, I want to not be alone and have my grandson with me. Because he's not a warm type of guy. So no. it's just cool that there are so many things. Like, you finished watching the movie and immediately started texting me questions.
Yes.
And it's like, we have to figure this out for ourselves and make up some of the answers and some of the backstory. And I like that it did that. But what I really loved is he's got all of those three things he needed to supposedly defeat his grandfather.
Right.
But those were what his dad needed to defeat his grandfather.
Oh, yeah.
But he is not his dad, and he doesn't know that, and his parents don't know that. So they think it's what he needs, and he thinks it's what he needs. But you know what he really needs? A connection to his parents that he finally got while going on the quest and using one string, which was his mom's hair, and the other string, which was his dad's bow. And those two strings, he is able to defeat his grandfather, not in a vengeful, angry way that he starts the battle with, but in a loving way where he's protecting the other citizens of the village and caring for them. And it's through that protection that he defeats his grandfather. And that's also very Harry Potter-esque.
That was so beautifully stated. You win this episode.
Yay!
You legitimately and sincerely win the episode. That was perfect. That was perfectly stated. That is exactly what this movie was about.
And it's not until that moment that you realize why it's called Kubo and the Two Strings, because the guitar has three strings.
I know. I watched that guitar the whole time. It's like, it never had just two strings.
Yep.
So
such a good movie.
I can't top that because you legitimately did win this episode, but I will say something that I noticed, which is there is a tradition in the Joseph Campbell hero's journey, young hero, the Luke Skywalker type of hero, mm-hmm. where both of his parents are dead.
Right.
In Luke's case, he believed that both of his parents were dead, and also his aunt and uncle were dead.
Yeah.
Kubo eventually discovered that both of his parents were alive.
Man, yeah.
But then he had to live through the death of his mother again.
And the death of his father again.
Which we haven't seen that since.
And how cool was it when he prayed to his dad? Sorry to interrupt, but when he prayed to his dad and he didn't answer, and it's because his dad was still alive, but we didn't know that yet?
Right.
So cool. All right, go on.
Well, I'm just saying we haven't seen that since Luke Starwalker.
Right. Yeah.
Sky Shuffler. That guy.
I'm only messing up one of the most recognizable names in cinema history.
But the way they handled this, it was such a unexpected look at processing grief.
Yes.
And what kind of life can you live after you've come to terms with a loss? So I would compare this to the Book of Life, where the young character there had his ancestors who on one day a year, even though they had died, he could still interact with them because that was the one day they could still be alive.
Yeah, the Day of the Dead.
The Day of the Dead.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So in the genre of my parents are dead, but I can still gain wisdom from them and knowledge from them. Mm-hmm. This fit very much into that, but in a new way.
Yeah, yeah. Totally agree. Because they're dead, but then they're not dead. But then I have to watch them die in front of me.
Right.
Holy cow.
Yeah. But, man. I mean, give Luke some credit that Ben Kenobi died, but then he was still there for him.
Yeah, yeah.
So you do have that type of storytelling. Which is very Japanese. Mulan did a similar thing where you mm-hmm. had the voices of your ancestors. But this just, it handled it. I guess what I'm saying is a lot of movies are very heavy-handed with this type of thing. And this was very subtle and very, you felt that this existed, but it was still not an easy deus ex machina fix.
Right, right. So he worked for everything that saved him.
Yes.
Nothing just fell from the sky in a little parachute.
Right.
To help him out at the very end.
And the entire story had this wonderful feeling of folklore as opposed to fairy tale.
Yes, yes.
And, you know, the voice of George Takei helps, obviously.
He said one line. How did he get a credit? He just said, oh my. I listened really carefully the second time through. That was his only line. That's some shrewd marketing right there. I wonder what kind of check he pulled from that.
So I guess maybe that would be the only thing we might like to have had more of. It would be more George Takei.
Yeah, I expected him to be a major character.
But still, I mean, you have to admit, this movie was the best love story between a monkey and a giant beetle since...
Harry and the Hendersons?
Sure.
fights Mothra? I don't know.
It's the best love story between a monkey and a giant beetle.
King Kong versus Mothra. Totally. I feel like if we keep gushing on this, we're going to run out of time for the rest of our show. So we probably need to move on. But is there any other last comments you have?
The last thought I have is I read a lot of reviews for this before the show, and I encountered some, for whatever reason, negative buzz because they felt like the movie had been white cast, which was a term I had never heard before.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But it's similar to, is it Scarlett Johansson that was cast in Ghost in the Shell and people are all upset about it?
Yes. Uh-huh.
The idea that there is a movie that has come from manga that is clearly a role that a non-Caucasian person should play.
Right.
And yet they cast a Caucasian person for Star Factor. And mm-hmm. apparently this movie has gotten some flack for being white cast.
Right.
And I don't buy into that. I reject that. And here's why. Because there is a tradition of really great import Japanese films being overdubbed.
Yeah.
So who do these critics think does the English voices of the Miyazaki films? I will tell you who. Kirsten Dunst. Wesley. Oh, Wesley from The Princess Bride.
Oh my gosh.
I think just the two of them. They do all the voices, I think, for all the Miyazaki films. Except maybe Janine Garofalo.
Oh, there's that one dainty English girl who was in...
Anne Hathaway. Pretty sure.
Anyways, yeah. Yeah, excellent point. Right.
So, you know, get over yourselves. This is an amazing story that exists in the world. Be grateful.
Right. And we don't know how they did the casting. It's kind of a little prejudging to say it was white cast. We don't know if they opened it up or if they approached people.
Yeah.
So.
And last mention, the music.
Mm-hmm.
Throughout the film. I've actually listened on YouTube to the entire soundtrack of Kubo.
Yeah.
So it was done by Dario Marianelli? Mario Barbarelli. Rosario Bertinelli. Okay, wait. I know that Rosario Bertinelli isn't right, but if it were, I would totally ask her out. But he...
I wonder why.
He did Anna Karina. He did Pride and Prejudice. He did the music for The Soloist.
He is
amazing. And what he did with While My Guitar Gently Weeps... if he doesn't win a Grammy for that, I'll stand and scream at the television if he doesn't win.
I'm going to stand and scream if Kubo doesn't take the Oscar from Zootopia and Finding Nemo and whatever else is out there that's going to be the obvious clear nod.
Yeah. So I think we agree. There's almost nothing better than Kubo. So we have to play better or worse than Kubo.
Okay. Worse. Go ahead.
Okay. Better or worse than Kubo? Mulan.
Worse than Kubo.
I agree. Mulan is worse because it opened with a old school, she has to impress a matchmaker in order to be married off and honor her family. And right from that, it's worse.
And as someone who's been to China and can speak some Chinese, I feel like they really didn't get the culture.
Agreed.
Didn't nail it. They didn't work hard enough to nail it. So that bothers me.
And although it had some similarities, which is that they summoned the dragon. In the same way that the monkey talisman became a helper to Kubo. Still Kubo far superior.
Agreed.
Okay, better or worse than Kubo? Kung Fu Panda.
Oh man, Kung Fu Panda was really good. And the remake song at the end. I always think about the song at the end now. The Kung Fu fighting was done well there too.
Yes, it was.
Oh my gosh. Well, I would say Kubo's a little bit better, but since Kung Fu Panda has a panda, it would be a tie. It would be like if Hurricane Dicka fought Dicka. Because the hurricane's name is Dicka, then it would be a tie. The Bears.
All right. Better or worse than Kubo? Kujo.
That's not a no contest. Kubo's way better.
Well, you know, for kids.
I'm not sure if I could think of a single Stephen King movie that I would say is better than Kubo.
All right, last one. Better or worse than Kubo? Kudos.
What is that? You mean the food?
Either
Kudos granola snack?
Either the tasty granola bars or the compliments.
Well, I'm just going to stick to my guns and go with Kubo on this. I've fallen out of love with Kudos granola snacks over the years. I started looking at the nutritional value and was underwhelmed.
All right, Kubo. Three clear wins and one tie. I think the trophy goes to Kubo.
Woohoo!
So, as
how
excited...
How do we move from one masterpiece to another?
On, like, the wings of the huge smile that I have on my face right now, that I get to talk about another incredibly good movie.
Your smile has wings? It must have been cold there in your shadow.
What?
You're the wind beneath my wings is the first line of that song.
Oh! No, my smile is made of magic origami.
Noted.
Thank you. And Miyazaki cat bus. All right. The Little Prince.
Le Petit Bohème.
How happy are we that this is in the world?
I love that it got made. I'm glad that it got put out in any medium it could. I wish we lived in a world where this and Kubo would have been climbing over each other to get into the theater to see this. But I'm glad it came to Netflix and I could see it really, like, right away. And, oh man, it's so good.
So, for our listeners who may or may not be familiar with the history, The Little Prince was a book, a French book that was first published in 1943. I read this to both of my daughters when they were children. It was part of our father-daughter experience. It was part of their childhood. It was part of their formative years. This book means a lot to us.
Mm-hmm.
It is the fourth most translated book in the world.
Wow. Harry Potter's got to be above that, right?
I don't know.
You just thought it was fourth. I'm sure the Bible's number one.
I could gush about one thing at a time.
Okay, fair enough. I'm going to stop mentioning Harry Potter.
It was voted
Harry Potter
the best book of the 20th century in France.
Wow.
It has been translated into more than 250 languages. It has sold over 140 million copies worldwide. It is one of the best-selling books ever published. It was... Obviously, 1943, published during World War II, it was written for a friend of the author who he felt needed a voice of support.
Mm-hmm.
And so the book came from such a good emotional place, it is no surprise that it resonated.
Yeah, yeah.
The author was exiled to North America after the World War II, and in the midst of his failing health and age... He was thinking about things like processing loss in the end of his life, and he drew from all of his experiences. He had his own aviation experience in the Sahara Desert, so all of this was very, very personal to him, and it all comes across. And I think that is, again, I keep going back to this, that's the lesson to be learned, not try to guess what the populace wants, but tell a personal story, tell something with a vision that you believe in, and other people will find it something that they relate to.
And live a rich life so that you have something to draw from instead of just trying to be deep on your own. Zack Snyder.
Yeah.
Sucker Punch.
So from that source material, things can go one of two ways. They can either completely ruin it.
That's true. That's true. You can be too close to it. Is that what you mean?
Sort of like the Watchmen.
Mm-hmm.
Where you could tell, Zack Snyder, you loved the source material, but you just couldn't flip it.
Yeah.
This one, they did it.
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah. A great comparison now that I see what you're doing, because now we're talking about the director and the writers who took a book and made it into a feature-length movie when the source material is not very long.
No. No, it's a little gem of a short book. And so how do you capture everything that is wonderful about that? And Netflix did it.
Oh boy, did they.
I loved the papier-mâché look of the scenes that were the little prince on his planet, where you have to understand that those scenes were from the book. There were these pen and ink watercolor drawings that didn't immediately look like they would lend themselves to animation. Mm-hmm. But what I realized later is that there was a roughness to those drawings, and the papier-mâché three-dimensional look captured that roughness.
Yeah.
And that's what made it work.
It was a brilliant decision for how to animate it and how to animate differently from the rest of the movie, which looked kind of standard animation. Good, but standard.
So the rest of the movie, I felt, could be compared to The Incredibles.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking as far as how it's animated.
The little houses, the little cars, the skin texture, the heads, the eyes, everything was Incredibles. So there was a texture difference between the scenes that were the little prince on his asteroid and the scenes that were the little girl in her real world. Her world was smooth and cold and concrete, solid, and his world was papier-mâché and more... like wind flowed through his world. And when you would go back and forth between the two, you really felt that there's a difference between her world and his world that just was so subtle and so perfect that every time they went back and forth, it wasn't jarring. I just loved it. I thought, oh, good, we get to go to his world again. I love his world.
Yeah, yeah. If you could hop on a trolley to get there, I would totally do that.
And even so, they had the love of the original book where... when the aviator was showing her his notes that he had made of when he met the little prince, they were the drawings from the book. And when she held them in her hand, they were pieces of paper with the original French language. They were the actual book pages. And I just thought, good on you, producers.
Yeah, and that it was in French too. I flipped out when I saw that.
Yes. So not only did they honor the book, they found a way to keep the intent. And again, if there were extra credit bonus points, I would easily give them.
It's just, it's such a deep concept and decision to say, we're going to take all the themes from this book, we're going to make the book exist inside of another reality, and we're going to have our main character go on the journey where the lessons of the book are the lessons that they need.
Yeah. So, I don't know how much of this is spoilers and non-spoilers.
All right, we'll just do the spoiler. I'm doing my jazz hands. Go ahead.
Okay, well, wait. Before we get to the spoiler section for the listeners who are just trying to decide to see this or not, let me just say again that this movie also had the courage to deal with death and loneliness and love that, like, love that's not equal. So when you see the little prince and you hear him experience his relationship with the rose,
mm-hmm.
It's not a fairy tale kind of love where it's equal. It's sort of a real world kind of love where you love someone and maybe they don't love you back in the same way.
Right. And both of you are too immature for it to be a lasting love in that moment.
Right. And you don't know what to do with that, but you know it's bittersweet and it's painful, but it's still something that you want. And that's a very mature theme, which may come from the fact that this is a French book, but it's still admirable that the executives at Netflix chose to not shy away from that.
Right, right. In other words, the prince doesn't get the girl at the end.
Right, yeah. And they made a lot of those tough decisions that would not have been in a purely this is for kids story. And I give them high marks for that. I will say that the lesson in this film, the aviator states, growing up is not the problem, forgetting is.
Yeah.
So when you think about children's animated films, and especially if you think about them within the last decade, there's really been this trend, which I credit Pixar for, of...
That's what I was going to ask, if you thought Pixar was the one who started it.
I do. I very, very, very much do. Of creating themes that children can appreciate, but that also have another second theme that adults can appreciate. So an example of that I would point out would be the lesson of Marlin in Finding Nemo.
Yeah, excellent example.
Where adults watching this film would realize that there is a level of overprotecting your child and smothering your child and not letting them experience the world that is detrimental to your child. And so there's the second level that reaches the adult, and Pixar is wonderful about that. And I think this movie does that too with the character of the mother.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about the theme that the aviator stated, which is growing up is not the problem, forgetting is, that's a very similar lesson to the Lego movie.
How's that?
In that the, what's the Saturday Night Live guy's name? Will what?
Will Arnett?
No.
Willy Wonka?
No.
Will Ferrell.
Will Ferrell.
I'm sorry, I was just messing with you.
Willie or won't he?
Wilma.
Okay, we'll cut all of that.
Aw.
Or not.
No, we won't. You don't have final say here. What are you going to do about it? Drive all the way to Fort Worth and stop me?
We'll cut the me saying we'll cut that.
As you were saying.
But in the way that the Will Ferrell character had forgotten the joy of playing.
Yeah.
And wanted to glue all the pieces down and wanted to stop his son from experiencing the joy of playing. And his son had to remind him what it was like to be a child. And the adult had to remember, you're right, that is the better way to be. And let's not crazy glue everything.
Mm-hmm.
So even in the Lego movie, there was that second level of message that came across.
Which I can relate to because Nami destroyed one of my Lego houses today. She was making wind noises and just going whoosh, whoosh, and just like shattering it on the ground. And I'd made it for her Shopkins.
Yeah. Ugh. But, you know, I think there's enough of those movies out there that we as adults still need to hear those lessons. Inside Out.
Yes. That was the one my mind first went to.
The Incredibles of, you know, let him compete, let him succeed or fail.
Right. Yeah.
In the end, you know, it's one thing for movies to tell children, you need to discover yourself. You need to know who you are. But adults have to let you do that. So we are all of us the dentist elf.
It's so true. And we are all of us the mean elf who doesn't want him to be a dentist.
Right.
Once we become parents.
So I think, okay, let's rate this.
All right.
Go.
So I'm going 4.5, and I'll let you do your rating first. I want to hear what you have to say.
No, you're going 4.5. Finish.
Yes, I'm going 4.5. I love this movie a lot. I thought it had a lot of the same strengths that Kubo had, like telling a story by showing you. There were some beautiful music montages where you see time passing. And it says so much about the characters without telling you. And I thought that was done really well. I loved all of the animation. There's just something about the ending. Not the ending that was faithful to the book. But part of what we'll get into spoilers that just didn't quite resonate with me. 4.5.
All right. I didn't realize we were doing halves. I was going to go 4.
Okay. All right. I'm still giving it a half because I still think it was so good.
Yeah, and I almost went 5 because of all the extra credit bonus points.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe I'll go 4.5. Maybe I'll give it the half because of the extra credit bonus points. Because they really did bring the watercolor illustrations to life. They really did do so many other above and beyond things right. But I feel like the mom in this story was unrealistic.
Okay.
What she expected from her daughter in that world seemed not like something that would happen. And so...
So she was a caricature rather than an actual character.
Yeah. So in... And I only fault that because the entire premise of the film is based on that.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm.
So...
Not taking away, though, from things we haven't mentioned, like how great the relationship between the little girl and the aviator was, how phenomenal Jeff Bridges' voice acting was in it.
And again...
The fox. Oh, my God.
The fox.
Was adorable.
I want to go online and see if anyone makes a stuffed toy fox.
Oh, there were tons of them.
Really? Okay, I'm buying them.
I wanted to make them for your daughters for Christmas, and I saw too many patterns. I couldn't sort through them all. There are so many foxes out there already. They're incredible.
Are they fantastic, Mr. Foxes?
Oh.
So I'm a little torn. I'm going to stick to my 4.5, but I will say that if you have a child, even younger, I think a child of 6 could watch 6. This.
Yes, agreed. I think a child of 6 needs to watch this.
Because even a child of 6 might experience the loss of a pet or the loss of a family member.
Yeah.
And this is a movie that I would watch with my child, with my arm around them on the couch, multiple times. And this opens that door to have discussions about what that means. And... Again, I started off this whole section by saying, how glad are we that this movie exists? I am very, 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 very glad that this movie exists. And for that reason, I want to give it the full 5 marks. So 4.5, please, please watch this film.
So we're going into spoilers now?
Spoilers.
Okay, so let me talk about that third act a little bit.
All right.
So in the third act, we meet a grown-up little prince.
Yes, Paul Rudd.
Paul Rudd. Again, a great voice acting choice. And this grown-up little prince has somehow got caught up into forgetting what it means to be a child, and he's an adult. He's Peter Pan in Hook.
Yes.
And I think I get what they were trying to do. Like, it needed the girl to save him. But I think I wasn't ready for the plot to go there. Does that make sense?
It does. I understand that he landed on the businessman's asteroid, but I don't understand why he was trapped there.
Right. So what did they do? They give you a name tag and then like they indoctrinate you by trapping you on this. Because they were going to do the same thing to the little girl that they did to him. You've seen it more recently than I have.
It seemed a little bit like the scene from The Matrix where Smith had Neo in the room and said... Yeah. You know, it's like once you're in that room, I guess they have you.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
So yeah, that part, and then the escape, which, okay, my favorite part of the whole movie is when the girl steps on one of the businessman's feet, and then the fox steps on a businessman's foot, and then just looks up, and he's like, ha! And it's just a little fox. So you know it didn't do anything.
And I saw your tweet about that when you said, when one moment captures the entire movie.
Yeah, and the director retweeted that. Yeah, that made me happy.
That was great.
So, so that was cool, and you got to remember our standards. We try to be super really high with our standards when we give really high praise. And so, when something starts to feel a little cliche, it takes me out of the movie a little bit, and it did that there. But it wasn't until that point that happened, and the whole rest of the movie I was just loving.
So I'll tell you this. I have a tendency as a writer, when a story gets to a point where I don't understand why is this character stuck in this place,
mm-hmm.
I start to invent a reason why he might be.
Okay, maybe you'll talk me into it.
And in my head, I thought, if the businessman somehow convinced him, if you stay here and do this thing, you will win back the love of your rose.
Ooh, you'll make a name for yourself.
Right.
You'll be able to give her a home.
Right. Right. Whatever.
Stability.
Whatever that, you know, insert valid reason here is, could have worked.
Yeah. Okay. I'm on board with that. It wasn't there, but I'll put that in my head canon. Make it work. I like it.
There you go.
I like it. It was, and even then though, I was still smiling and grinning from ear to ear during that act, and I was still loving watching it.
But I admit that my heart felt very happy when the girl released all the stars and they just started floating up.
Oh yeah.
Just the visual of it and the act of it made my heart lighter.
Mm-hmm. Going back to montage, the way that her life was represented on the board, like just your life will be successful through this series of check marks.
Mm-hmm.
And sliding these little magnets from not finished to finished. And the storytelling of her having to try and find a way to work around that and still live her life, like in that montage, was just so well done. It was such a great visual way to show what was going on.
Yeah, it really was. There were so many things that story-wise they did right with this. And it never felt forced. It always felt like you got halfway into something and realized, oh, okay, yeah, sure.
And when they build the tension, they know how to do it well, because when the girl is doing the interview to go in the school and she starts giving the programmed answer and it's not the answer to the question that they're asking her, my wife was like scrunched up in a little ball and biting her nails and going, ah!
Yeah, so speaking
mission accomplished.
Speaking of Mulan, how similar was that scene to Mulan having to answer all the questions from the Chinese matchmaker woman in order to honor her family, and all of the cheat sheet things she had written on her arm were all smudged, and she got mm-hmm. the answer wrong, and she completely failed the interview, and the matchmaker woman told her that she dishonored her family and she had ruined everything.
Yeah, and then you have to then either just wallow in that or choose to recreate yourself as something that wasn't what you were expected to be.
Which is scarier.
Yeah. Wait, are you asking me which is scarier?
Well, the second. That's the rhetorical question, is which of the two paths is scarier? What if she had succeeded and actually gone down the path that her mother wanted her to?
Right.
Or, yes, she failed this, and now she's, you know, sort of adrift and needing to find some other direction. Which of the two is the scarier? You know, you could make the case that the first, if everything had worked, would have been the scarier. She would have been imprisoned.
Yeah, shackled in to a person she wasn't meant to be.
Right. So, at least the little prince girl, when she failed, had the decency not to break out into a song about it.
Well said.
So, by the way, comparing this film to other films, the voice of the little prince,
mm-hmm.
did you know that he is the voice of baby Tai Lung from Kung Fu Panda?
No way.
Yes.
That's amazing.
So, there you go. But I think to wrap this up, I feel like I'm compelled to say one last thing, in that this film, with the different stylistic treatments and the different approaches and themes, it really captured the difference between a story of imagination and a fairy tale.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that is that a fairy tale in the early classic Disney tradition, a fairy tale promises to fix all of your problems forever.
Yes.
It is the, and they lived happily ever after, which is based on at least the assumption that you never look past the perfect ending.
Right.
So who knows what actually happens after the wedding or the kiss?
Mm-hmm.
For all we know, Eric and Ariel didn't work out. Maybe they got divorced.
What's with all these eggs you're laying?
Yeah, maybe she spent...
in the tub.
Maybe she spent all of her time in that tub. And he was always too busy.
Maybe he accidentally ate someone she knew. We don't know.
Maybe Cinderella couldn't deal with the paparazzi. And she retreated into the bottle in gateway drugs. We don't know. I mean, but the idea is that a story of imagination doesn't assume everything afterwards. It just says you've reached this point, and you've reached this point in a way that you can be proud of.
And there's hope going forward.
Right.
My last comment would be, if someone were listening to this podcast and hadn't seen either of these two movies, and they heard great praise for Kubo and then almost as great praise for Little Prince, and said, hey, they're both about dealing with death, so I'll just take my kid to see Kubo, I would say that I praise this one for dealing with death issues in a way that I don't see in movies very often, and never in a kid's movie, which is the death of someone who you took a chance to love, and they're dying from natural causes and growing old.
That's true, because the little girl had created such a bond with the old aviator. She dreaded losing him to old age.
Yeah, so what a brilliant way to go with that story. It was a stroke of genius, and I loved it so much.
It really, really was.
That type of relationship you just don't see anymore. You don't see people getting to know their neighbors, and I think part of it is the risk involved of what happens if I get close to these people.
But that is, again, such an admirable, courageous theme that the producers of this movie chose to embrace instead of shy away from, which is, in life, it is better to have the experience of getting to know someone like that than to so fear their loss that you choose to not get to know them.
Yeah, exactly. Good job. Great movie. Great theme.
Great movie. See it. See it with your kids.
Agreed. Watch it on the couch with your arm around them.
All right. So, since obviously we love this film, it's time to play Better or Worse with The Little Prince.
All right.
So, Better or Worse than The Little Prince. Other movies that have the word little or prince.
Awesome.
So, Better or Worse than The Little Prince. The Little Mermaid.
Man, I've got to give Little Mermaid its props. It was a phenomenal movie. To me, it kicked off the Disney golden age, and the music in it was great. I can watch it today and still not necessarily pick holes in it unless I'm just trying to. So, Little Mermaid better.
I'm surprised. All right. Better or worse than The Little Prince? Stuart Little.
Stuart Little is so bad. It's not even a contest. Also based off of a book, too. So, how apropos.
How apropos. But come on.
How... And I used French. How apropos was that?
But House and the girl from Beetlejuice.
No.
All right. Better or worse than The Little Prince? The Fresh Prince.
The TV show?
Yes.
I'm all about Will Smith and about. But there's no way that any or all of the episodes of that show is better than The Little Prince. That is not something I want to sit down and watch with my kids.
Wasn't there that one episode where Carlton learned that one lesson that one time? No? Okay.
That it's not unusual to be loved by anyone.
That's the one.
Okay, yes.
Unless you're being loved by a rose, which is somewhat unusual.
That's true.
Who speaks in the voice of Marianne Cotillard. All right.
Don't cut that yard that the rose is growing in.
All right, last one.
Throwback pun. Yes.
Better or worse than The Little Prince? The Prince by Machiavelli.
I don't know what that one is.
Oh, seriously?
Nope.
That was like my huge punchline. I can't believe you don't know what that is. All right, it's this hugely horrible novel written by a guy who basically says, just look out for yourself and do all things if it benefits you.
So basically the exact opposite. It's lesson like, to be learned.
If you had a shelf of books like that, it would be right next to Sun Tzu, The Art of War, and Donald Trump's I'm All About Me.
Fair enough.
So, better or worse?
I defer to your good judgment.
Little Prince is better.
Well, there you have it. Okay. So,
there you go.
I didn't have any that it was like was worse than Little Mermaid, but only by a little, and it's definitely better than everything else.
Only by a little. All right. So, let us wrap up this show by answering a question that you texted me offline.
Right.
Which is, why is it, dear brother?
Is that how I phrased it? Oh, brother mine.
You can't prove that you didn't. That animation movies that are stop motion seem to not do as well as those that are CGI.
Yeah, even the ones that supposedly do great, like Coraline and Corpse Bride, are still only hitting around 70 million, like worldwide.
So
something like that.
So you sent me a list. And yes. On the top of the list is Chicken Run, who earned
yes!
just over 100 million.
I was so proud of that.
Yes.
Good on you, Chicken Run.
Yeah.
Such a good movie.
But I don't want to be a pie.
We've referenced that movie at least five times on our podcast.
Yeah.
At least.
Number two, Coraline, the same studio that made Kubo and the Two Strings.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Number three, The Nightmare Before Christmas.
Which is an indisputable classic.
Indisputable. And by the way, it's only number three by a hair under Coraline.
Mm-hmm.
Number four, Wallace and Gromit, same studio as Chicken Run.
Curse and the Were-Rabbit.
Yeah.
It's an underrated movie that's phenomenal.
Number five, again, just a hair under the Curse of the Were-Rabbit.
Nicely done.
Is
even when our puns are unintentional.
Is
we're here for you.
Is Paranorman, same studio as Kubo and the Two Strings.
Oh my goodness. Paranorman. Okay, if you read the plot synopsis for that, it is one of the best horror plot stories ever.
It really is.
So good.
Number six, Corpse Bride, same studio as The Nightmare Before Christmas.
Right, but with help from Laika for that one.
Yes. Number seven, Box Trolls, same studio as Kubo and the Two Strings.
Mm-hmm. That one might actually be my favorite, even though it's the one that's got the lowest score on Rotten Tomatoes of a measly 80%.
And number eight, Kubo itself.
Woohoo! So, and climbing.
So that's kind of the landscape. And now let me say, number 11 is a film that I love, which is James and the Giant Peach.
Mm-hmm.
Number 12, another film I love, The Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Amazing. George Clooney.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect.
And then you get into 13 is Shaun the Sheep. 16 is the original Wallace and Gromit. So you have, I mean, of the top 20, there are some amazingly created and crafted, remarkable films, but only one of them broke 100 million.
It's amazing. Could it be that the story is always so good because it takes so long to make stop motion that they're not going to do a terrible movie because what a bad investment that would be time-wise?
I think so. But so I have a bit of a theory about this because you asked me, like, does this bode not well for the future of stop motion animation?
Yeah. Okay, by the way, Laika has always, all of their movies have been done on a 60 million budget.
Mm-hmm.
And only Coraline has gone over that. The others don't even make it to that. Do they just have some like stop motion aficionados that they write grants to? How did they get to keep making these amazing movies? Like, it's amazing that they get to do that.
Well, I don't know because Paranorman didn't break 60.
Yeah, right.
So,
and neither did Box Trolls, and neither will Kubo.
And neither did, yeah. So I have two thoughts. One is, I think that there are a lot of us in the viewing audience that have a love for stop motion animation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that comes from our childhood of growing up on the classic Rankin-Bass stop motion animations like Rudolph.
Yeah.
And the prequel to Santa.
That was so weird. Dude, that was a weird trippy movie.
Yeah.
Or Toys in the Attic.
So, DVD sales aside, I think that Netflix may have the right idea here, which is sponsor and back a movie that does get released in theaters and has the opportunity to profit in that way, but then also has the secondary profit model of being on Netflix guaranteed.
Mm-hmm.
And Netflix has shown with things like Daredevil and some of its other series that there is an almost guaranteed profit here.
Mm-hmm.
So if The Little Prince was approached and sort of bought into that model, then maybe there is still a future for this kind of thing with that model where it's the theater release, the DVD sales, and the Netflix release.
Mm-hmm.
But what I thought was interesting in the plot of Kubo itself is that the character of Kubo at the beginning of the film was fighting for the right to tell great stories.
Yes. Exactly.
And Kubo himself admitted, I don't always have a good ending.
That's so true.
So it did very much seem a little bit meta of the struggle that the studio has of, we still want to tell these stories, but we need it to work. So I don't have I can fix this answer to your question. But I think that that's the landscape of it and that's the reality of it. And
right. But my question was, why don't they perform as well?
I don't know. I almost wanted to look into maybe the science of it, of do young children visually respond better to traditional CGI than to stop motion? Is there something about the way that they move and the textures and the colors of it that they like CGI better? I don't know.
Or is it just that the stop motion genre is deeper and darker in general, and so that just doesn't bring as many people to theaters? It's like the English Patient of the children's studio, where it will win the Oscar, but wow, did it not do well at the box office?
I suppose. I mean, maybe there's some, you know, like the Uncanny Valley, maybe there's some valley of a film that's so good it can't succeed.
Yeah, but the critics, they all love both of these movies.
Yeah.
And they gush over them. And so that's got to count for something, man.
I don't know. I mean, I suppose you could look back to the AFI Top 100 Greatest Films of All Time and see how they did at the box office. And I'm sure some of them didn't do well at the time, but were such classic films that they proved themselves to be the classics that they were. And I really do think that Kubo is going to be one of those films.
Yeah. Yeah, probably. Could it be that none of them had talking food in them?
Like Sausage Party?
Yes.
The other contender for classic of 2016. Well, I really think that I hope that the business model of theater release plus DVD sales plus Netflix guarantee is enough to keep this type of film alive and this genre alive and the desire to make quality films alive.
Me too. I'm so buying Kubo as soon as it comes out, because just for the special features. That end credit scene?
Yes!
Where they're putting the skeleton together and you're like, holy cow, that skeleton was actually 16 feet tall.
Yes.
In real life.
Yes. And I actually, you know, put this out on Facebook today, but I want to say this one more time, which is the opposite of what I said about Suicide Squad. One of the reasons that I so criticize Suicide Squad is that if they keep making terrible films like that, it will hurt the superhero genre.
Mm-hmm.
If animation studios continue to make wonderful films like Kubo and the Little Prince, it can only help the animation genre.
Right, because they're raising the bar and you have to respond to it.
You have to.
Or make movies about sausages.
Yeah, so I'm right there with you. I will put my money down behind my sentiment in order to keep the genre alive and to keep the high bar alive.
All right.
So there you go, world, Earth, planet.
Look at us being mostly positive about two movies all the way through our episode. But they earned it.
Like Private Ryan.
Because I'm sure everyone working on these movies had someone die so they could live.
So
I think that brings us to the end of our show.
It really does.
And I don't want it to be over.
And I thank you all for bearing with us while we had a complete and total agree fest. But come on, this was awesome.
It was. It won't happen often too, so.
No, what we need to do another time, though, is have a underrated animation movies episode.
That's a great idea. Who came up with that?
Does it matter who came up with it, or does it matter who claims credit?
I don't. Well, if our current campaigns for president or anything, I think it's all about who claims credit.
I believe that history goes to the victor, so.
Good idea, bro. Let's do that. I'm so on board with your idea. I wish I'd thought of it. Let's do it.
Boys, you're both pretty.
Let's do all of it.
You are as
underrated animated movies.
You are as on board with this idea as Jack is to Rose at the end of Titanic.
You mean I'm just sinking under the water?
Which will later
we couldn't take turns.
Which will later be proved by Mythbusters. Mythbusters? Miss Buster.
She's one of my favorite Busters in the Buster family.
Which will later be proved by Mythbusters to have been plenty of room for the both of us.
Oh my gosh, do we have a battle cry?
We do. And my battle cry comes from my best friend Bubbles.
Good night, citizens. Good night, everyone.
Hey, that's cheating.
No, it's not. She's my best friend. So, thanks for listening, everybody. And follow us at FanBroFriends on Twitter. And if you're listening to us on iTunes, give us a good rating, because it kind of makes our day when we're in the morning making our coffee and thinking, is there a reason to go on? Maybe I'll check iTunes and see if there's a good rating.
And so far, we only have the one, and I have it memorized now after having read it over and over as a pep talk at the beginning of my day.
No, dude, don't sound desperate.
Sorry. Bye, everyone.
Goodbye. Like Stranger Things, but the musical.
Man, how cool was that guy's pixel art? It amazes me when people can, like, capture the essence of a character with just a few pixels.
What are you talking about?
That tweet I put out that had the guy who did pixel art for Stranger Things.
Yes, in the future, when I will have looked at that, I will have been impressed.
It was 2 days ago.
Which is the past, which is similar to the future, where I will have looked at this.
And you've tweeted since then. So you've been on Twitter since then.
I got nothing.
And it should have been in your notifications, because I mentioned you in the tweet.
My phone is very small. I blame the font size. Oh, I saw this. I just didn't understand it.
Do you now?
In the future, when I will have seen the show, I will have understood this.
I thought you'd seen it already.
I have other things.
You just referenced it as if you'd seen it.
It's what I do.
Ladies and gentlemen, from now on, you know, anything he says may or may not have been something he actually saw. I don't think he actually saw Batman v Superman. I think our entire podcast is a farce. We're going to have to go back and see how many emails he deleted. Are you a national security risk?
I don't know. How many times can you walk out of a movie and still claim that you've seen the whole thing?
It depends. You can only leave for one reason each time, a different reason each time. If you go for a popcorn break, a potty break, to throw up, those are all different times.
Okay, so my first reason was Ben Affleck. My second reason was, oh crap, it's the same reason.
All right. We're going to have to remove that episode now for journalistic integrity.
Yeah.
I couldn't even get through that line, as if we ever had journalist integrity.
Those are two words that go great together.
I've heard. Yeah, like chocolate and peanut butter.
Or military intelligence.
Or jumbo shrimp.
All right. Well, I'm kind of ready to just do this.
Okay.